Welcome to another episode of the Rev Thinking Podcast, where we delve into the hearts and minds of the most innovative, creative leaders in the design, production, and today I get to add fashion industry. I want to give you a gift today and introduce you to a not so common voice on the Rev Thinking Podcast. We've become familiar with the stories of studio, production company, and agency owners within our industry, but the journey of a creative entrepreneur can take on many different forms. Imagine combining tomorrow's technology of blockchain storytelling and authentication with a rich legacy of over 700 years of luxury craftsmanship. That's what Marlene Piedot-Nacker is all about. As CEO and founder of Muldooney's Paris, she's revolutionized an industry with an avant-garde fashion brand, where savoir-faire design, technology, and art meet. Her journey travels through the challenges and perseverance of being an athlete, fighting against the odds of a competitive luxury market, and then battling personal giants like cancer. And Marlene hasn't just survived, she's thrived and decided to revolutionize luxury with a purpose. I especially appreciate her wisdom of sticking to her values, the power of authenticity, and how true magic in business comes from blending the past and future craftsmanship through hard work. So if you're about crafting a legacy while staying true to your story, you're going to enjoy this personal conversation into the mind and soul of a unique creative entrepreneur. Enjoy this chat between myself and Marlene Piedot-Nacker. It's so great to meet you face to face because, you know, when you're from a distance, when you meet a creative person, you see someone's creative act, which yours is gorgeous. You're doing this amazing product line. I become an instant fan.
That's quite interesting. I love that, by the way. I love that. I get quite a lot of it and I'm always so, I'm humbled by it. But what attracted you? I'm not interviewing, but I'm just curious.
Well, how else do you approach a creative person? You often see their creative act, right? And you're doing fashion and fashion product. You've decided to make a common product in a very stylized way. So you're going through a process. You have your imagination at work. You have to think of materials and fabric. You have to think of marketplace and desire. And in a way, in product design, I almost feel like you take more risk because you're trying to get something into a marketplace that people don't yet know they want. So you are actually introducing something.
Yes.
So you're a futurist in a way. You have to bring the future into the present.
Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you touched a really good point. We are creators. It's firstly, it can be a very gut-wrenching position or it can be a glorified triumph. You know, that's how I sort of look at it, especially when it's very warmly embraced. You know, I founded Muldooney's in 2005 and... like every brand, you know, if you ever have a chance to read through my memoir, I was actually paging through it yesterday and was tearing because it's quite, you know, still brings back so many memories. But, you know, what was wonderful to read is how consistent my vision has always been in terms of authenticity, in terms of storytelling, in terms of realness, but also in terms of meaning. Everything must carry meaning. You know, in 2009, when we were really sort of taking off in terms of expansion, this was January 2009, and then December 2009, I'm diagnosed with a cancer. So I never had the chance to sort of fully enjoy the entire thing as most people would, because there wasn't anything glamorous about, you know, having to go into immunotherapy, radiation therapy, hospitals, and then hopping onto a plane and going off and, you know, reselling and selling your products all over the world.
Yeah.
But the thing I really learned in that one moment was really to be able to translate, you know, my pain, so to speak, the horror of everything that you were going through, the devastation. And for me, really sort of drowning myself almost in drowning all of my sorrows in the color, in the beauty, in textures, in everything I was doing. And every season that you created a new collection made you feel like you were still alive. And so that one moment, I remember, you know, it was in 2010, and there was a lot of uncertainty about whether I would make it through the next 12 months, because I was basically told by my oncologist, you know, if you do not do this, you're going to be terminal in 12 months. And I just had this very sort of kind of like bravado kind of attitude where I basically said, well, if this is going to be it, then let it just be the best collection of my life. And I'm just going to do everything I wanted.
You threw the chains off in a way. You were able to say to give yourself permission. You know that you are a creative person and there's something inside of you.
Yes.
That life gave you the challenge to get that out. And you said, okay, here I go.
I don't don't even think it was life that gave me that chance. It was circumstance that challenged my way of thinking. Either I could sit back and be very sore and heartbroken about where I was because I was so young when I was diagnosed, or I could flip that and really choose to channel that into creating. Whatever I do, it has to be done with 100%, or I don't bother doing it at all. With what we've created with Buldoonies today, with this relaunch, it's nothing short of extraordinary because, you know, you mentioned that when you looked at how we created and the product design, and it's very futuristic, yes, but also in the detail. Because when I was building also the 8 series with the blockchain innovation solution, with our provenance time capsule solution, and this was already, you know, in 2016, 17, before blockchain became so mainstream, this was my blueprint for this relaunch. And all of the 8 series I've designed are based on iconic legends, heroes and heroines, which were actually inspiring me, healing me, transforming during the sabbatical.
Who you've become because of this journey that you've taken. I feel like you have had you were creatively motivated as a young person. You knew you wanted to do something. Life gave you a different challenge to take on. And it feels like, or it seems like, you connected to people differently then. And it seemed like your current expression, what people were able to take from your product, is a connection now to these life stories that you are putting out there. How do you know that what you're creating is going to make that connection with others? Is that a concern of yours, or is that a risk that you take? And do you feel like it's very risky when you make that?
That's a really great question. When I actually stopped with Buldoonies in 2014, one of the reasons as well was because, you know, we had the big sort of not only my cancer need of sabbatical, but it was also we had digital transformation that was sort of coming into the entire sort of industry. And you can see this industry 4.0 kind of like really starting off. And luxury was behind. Our industry was probably one of the last to kind of get onto the bandwagon. You know, we really did not want to embrace even e-commerce in 2015. Now it's a very different story, of course. Yeah. So the reality was that you could see there was a new customer on the horizon, a customer that was going to be far more inquisitive, far more inquiring. And she was going to be asking very, very pertinent questions about where product came, what it meant, what raw materials were in, where it comes from. So provenance, authenticity, uniqueness, why should I buy it? What is the meaning behind it? I mean, these are all the questions that they were even asking then. And today it's gotten even more profound, you know, especially with new technologies. So it was during my MBA, you know, I was doing my supply chain executive MBA at the London College of Fashion. So this was module one. And it was supply chain and sustainability. And in the paper in 2015 and 16, I worked on a discursive where I was integrating new technologies such as blockchain, et cetera, downstream in the supply chain to enable connection upstream in the supply chain with consumers, et cetera, to create this kind of ecosystem between a customer, the brand, and our, you know, the artisanal history. Because luxury is built on the provenance and authenticity. I realized that downstream was where all the heritage, the craftsmanship, the tradition, the skills, everything that makes a luxury product, it's such a rich treasure trove of data. No one was using it effectively. So my paper was literally to show transparency and traceability by integrating sensors like holograms, which we've now done, enabled with NFC, and then all paired onto the blockchain sort of network, highlighting traceability, transparency in the supply chain, but also using that to connect from a very emotive perspective, you know, sharing the rich heritage and the provenance and the stories of my 700-year supply chain.
Yeah.
700 years of heritage of skill down there. So you ask the question, how do we know that customers want this? Because today's customer is far smarter than our predecessors in luxury. Really? I mean, you know, you cannot just put a fur coat in front of them the way you did in the past and sell it for, you know, hundreds and thousands of euros, and people would buy it because it came with, you know, a made in France label or this brand name, etc. Today, they are going to be asking far more questions. You know, where is it sourced? What products, what raw materials go into it? So it was a very strategic decision when I was designing, creating. This is also part of the creative process, Tim. When you're making a product, even from a product development, every single dot on that consumer journey must connect. From the point of creation, from the point where you made this product, you as a designer, well, at least I do anyway, I'm still thinking about, okay, how do we actually position this? How do we market this? How do we put this into the market that is actually going to create a little bit of a disruption that we're going to stand out against our competitors? Because we're in a card quadrant where we have the Hermes, we have the, you know, the Brunello Cucinelli's, we have the Louis Vuitton, we have all the big, the Chanel's, etc. They're all there. Yeah. So the challenge really for me was, I'm relaunching, I'm going to come through to France, I'm going to do it with a made in France label. I want all my raw materials to be sourced here locally in France, which was big because nobody does it, to be honest. But if I'm showing authenticity and transparency and I'm saying it's the best, it must come from here. So for my Menakshi, 11 of the 13 elements, yes, are sourced locally here in France. There's only three that come from outside. But again, it carried meaning because every single element on the bag is telling a story of Menakshi. At the same time, it's also telling stories about the artisans, the heritage, the craftsmanship, the uniqueness, everything that makes a product luxury, everything that makes it French, everything that talks about savoir-faire is all in this one bag.
Your form of art, it's so fascinating to me because you are taking on 700 years in your product line, on your shoulders, in your process. You have to stay true to that.
Yeah.
But then evolve it. And you have this almost responsibility of connecting something old and new. Mm. I want to hear the story about how you got into luxury, because it feels to me so insular, so special, so unique. I feel like you have to be like touched by God to be welcomed into it. And then have somebody who's done it successfully is like, it's incredible the fact that you know that journey. I would love to just hear what that one pivotal moment is.
The industry is feral. The industry is rapacious. The industry is unforgiving. My youth was, I was more an academic. I was more an athlete. I used to be 100 and 200 meter sprinter, you know, right up until like 17. So I was never interested in fashion, Tim. I was never interested in any of this, but I had long legs, arms, and I never knew what to do with them afterwards. And then I got this gig as a model and then into television. And suddenly I felt like a butterfly, like, you know, I was coming out of this cocoon of being this plain Jane, and suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, okay, well, I'm really not this wallflower of, you know, kind of like an ugly duckling kind of story. It really, you really felt like you were growing up and your wings were there and you were ready to fly. I think it was at one of these shows and I saw this model come down the catwalk. I wasn't even looking at her. It was the bag that sort of captured my attention. And, you know, my eye went straight into it. And I was disassembling the bag, reassembling it over and over and over. And that became the moment where it was so serendipitous that I realized, okay, I think I just found my calling. And this was probably in 2004. And it's a slow build, Tim. It's a long haul grind. You push back down and you must remember, unfortunately, luxury was built even in the centuries before. It was always, luxury was the forte of the aristocracy, right? It's the rich man's world, literally. And it's not open to all, especially from a diversity perspective. When I was starting out in 2004, 2005, I mean, it was painful. You have to be ready to be humiliated. You have to be ready for there to be games being played. You have to be ready to be pushed back down. But, you know, when you have a vision, which is so singular, which is an extension of who you are, and you know where you're going, that's going to be your compass. Ambition, ego, vanity, this kind of like being put on a pedestal, etc. Those are not my drivers. Doing something that I really love, living my purpose and being able to create impact with it because I know it's the right thing to do, those are my drivers. There's only one moment, I guess, when I do feel anxious is when a new collection comes out. When the new collection goes out, that's my moment of greatest vulnerability. You know, that's when really between the veil of time is very porous for me, to be honest. People can, you know, really be brutal in terms of their feedback, etc. And that could be quite crushing.
So what's your secret in that moment then? What's your words of encouragement if someone is putting themselves out there and feeling that way? How do you get through that moment?
Oh, that's a great question. For me, what do I do? Oh, I would cry. Because you've just burned your soul completely and someone didn't get it. So it's a 24-hour rule. I mean, everything comes out. Waterworks, cussing, cursing, everything comes out to the point where then the next morning you hit the ground running again. You hit that reset button and you keep going because your vision is clear. You know the next step is going to lead to this and this. And it's a great question that you ask, because even when I was building all of this, people doubted my ability, especially at the outset, you know, when I was talking about innovation in the supply chain with leather goods, luxury, I was seriously doubted. You know, people never gave me the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, a year in, with my persistence and constant haranguing about the solution and what I was doing, I was fortunate that, I guess it was serendipity who connected me to this incredible atelier in the center of Paris, which is Edgar Hamon. They produce, you know, top tier luxury names. And that was just the start of this incredibly beautiful creation for everything that we did. And I was fortunate in that sense because I know having just one key player like this to support you with your project, who sees your vision, who feels that vision, is so important because they will then be able to connect you with all the other partners. Now, all the other partners in my supply chain work with us because we work with them and because they believe in us. And of course, because the project is so groundbreaking, luxury at the moment, especially here in Europe, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but here in the EU, we've just passed the digital passport, product passport regulation, whereby 2026, all luxury goods must carry a DPP highlighting transparency and traceability. So 2 years ago, there was nothing. We were building it. Now it's all there. So it was such an innovative project. So there were many people that wanted to jump on board. And I guess you just have to be true to yourself, true to your purpose, and have a vision which is authentic, authentically you.
This is such good encouragement. In the creative space, I feel like we grow up and we know that we have that calling. We have that purpose. There's things that we need to do. And it just has to come out. That drive that you have to get that creative energy out of you, you can't stop it in a way. It's a force of nature. Many people hold themselves back for acceptance, for approval, or for permission. And in trying to inspire a creative person, it's good to have some encouragement that says, no, it's holding yourself back is the issue. And getting yourself out there is the solution. And of course, you need a 24-hour rule because it's not always accepted, but it doesn't mean it's over or crushed.
You have to have a reset button. I have the 24-hour rule. I'm at the gym. I have to run. So I'm on a treadmill where I run. I sprint run with dumbbells, 2 kilograms on each hand. So you have to have your own reset button because you know that you're going to be hit. You're going to be crushed. They're going to come after you because you're a threat. And everyone's reset button would be different. Some people would need to maybe to go down to the local pub or maybe go out, you know, clubbing or have cocktails with a friend, etc. So everyone is going to have their own reset button. Yeah. I feel that you have to have an anchor, and the anchor, which is always going to be kind of your safe place when things go amiss.
What role does community have in your process? Do you rely on other people? Are you closely related to other people in the luxury space? Do you collaborate with each other, or are you somewhat insular in your space and need to find community?
Well, yes, at this stage, because we're 18 months in to our relaunch here with the whole sort of luxury, I'm really building on all of that. But what I'm finding is that the people that we are really connecting with at the moment are really futurists and, you know, the innovators, especially from the technology aspect and the technology sort of space. So a lot of individuals, many individuals are coming in from, you know, the blockchain sort of space, because they're very excited about what we've done and how we've integrated it. But in terms of the luxury sector, you know, it's predominantly my suppliers, my artisans, those people that are really backing us, you know, on our project at the present moment. Are we getting the just sort of media attention, which we deserve? No, to be honest, I don't think we would. We're not, and I don't think we would, because it's the way the system is built. Take, for example, you have some of the big leading fashion publications, which where the co-owners are already some of the other leading luxury brands, right? So we're never going to kind of break those barriers instantly.
Do you recognize yourself as the leader opening up opportunities for others in that space? You know, taking on what you took on in 2004 to what you are now, like how much you've evolved has created a movement in a way. People can look at you as that example.
It's wonderful. It's romantic, and it's so magnanimous how you sort of phrase that. But I can honestly tell you, and this might come across as incredibly macabre, I think the only time I would probably be accoladed or revered, etc., is probably when I'm no longer here. It's really sad to say. No, but it's really true. You look at all the fashion greats, you know, when we are no longer here, that's when suddenly we are put on a pedestal, because we become so famous just for the fact that, you know, we've created all of this. And probably because, you know, they can put executives in place who can just go and commercialize on all our hard work.
It's a very practical way of thinking of it.
Yeah, so all I'm going to say is, you know, for any creatives who are sort of listening to this, especially if you're a luxury sort of starter and wanting to get into the industry, understand, if you're going to do this for ego or vanity or to be on that cover of Vogue or Harper's, etc., then all I can tell you, that's probably not going to be long lasting. Your purpose must come from the fact that you have a vision to create, because it's an extension of yourself, because you're not going to get instantaneously, you know, all the applause, etc. And probably my applause is there, Tim. It's just I'm not driven or motivated by it. It's healthier, to be honest, because you remain so true to yourself and so authentic in the entire journey and process.
Oh my gosh, I really love that idea that you're not doing everything just to please others.
No.
I think in every creative field, when someone's seeking out what you're making as a creative person, they're looking for the creative person's voice in their life. They actually want the creative person. They want you to be authentic, and they want that authentic voice in their life. That's why we're relating to you. They don't want you motivated by the consumer. Then I already have my voice. I already have my voice in the equation. I want to add something else to it.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think it's the new customer of today, you know, this Gen Z and the millennial. And, you know, as we evolve further with the new generations, et cetera, to come, they are just so much smarter, so much independent, so much more, you know, have such a kind of like a utopian view on the world and everything around. For them, a brand name does not mean the same thing it did, you know, like 20, 30 years ago.
The beautiful thing about the space that you're in is that it's a physical space. It takes human power, human energy, and as you're saying, history to make those elements, to perfect those elements, to make them a luxury quality product that you can then add to your own bags and to your own fashion brands. Many people in the creative space right now are only in digital.
Yeah.
They don't have that legacy of a product or legacy of a purpose. They're grabbing pixels and moving them. And there's a new disruptor of something that's going to generate pixels for you even. So that even the first creative energy people put forward might be generated by a computer first. Yeah. And then they have to add story second. You have this amazing legacy of the story that comes with you. And almost, as I said earlier, the burden of that story that to bring it into that, Do you think that's the differentiator? Do you think there's a luxury differentiator always because of the story and the centuries of preparation for this moment that you introduced to your brand that makes it relatable in that way?
I think there always has to be a differentiator, but it also has to be very authentic. It also has to be very salient and clear. And the DNA for Muldoonies has always been, you know, merging the old with the new. So here, this time, it's about the physical product merging with its digital twin and using it then on, you know, a digital kind of platform within the blockchain sort of ecosystem, and all of that data becoming data and information which can really emotively engage and connect with your customer. It's a great question. Again, you asked about, is this the reason why people are reacting at the present moment to our entire sort of storytelling, the entire brand development? For sure, because it is groundbreaking, but it's also so sophisticated and it's also so singular in its approach.
I love the way you're taking on this identity of being a disruptor in something that has centuries of legacy to it. But the disruption is just the adding purpose to a luxury quality. So it's your story and your purpose is what is new to the environment, but the legacy is always there as part of it. And that's why you're saying the word authenticity, right? Authenticity is that, to truly be you.
Let's be honest, in luxury, we're always selling a dream. Luxury at the present moment, you know, for at least 90% is built on marketing. You have to have a huge marketing budget because, you know, you're going to have to, most brands will bring in the great influencers, the big celebrities, etc., and your product is endorsed. Yes. And we are on the complete other spectrum where everything for us is about our product, our heritage, our design quality, the authenticity of that, and then connecting that on every single touch point of the customer journey. Now, that's pure luxury. It's provenance luxury. It's quiet luxury. It's different. It's such a different, unique approach that compared to what other big luxury brands are doing at the moment, it's not ubiquitous because you're not going to go into every place or every store and see our collections, etc. So in that sense, you are selling something that is only for the discerning. It's extraordinary. So that's always going to be appealing to people that are looking for that sort of quality, those sort of, you know, extraordinary sort of experiences as well. And clever. It's very intellectual in that sense.
Okay, so here's my selfish question. How do I get to collaborate with you someday? So I want to introduce a luxury product. I don't even know what it is yet, but you've won me over. This importance of...
Do I have a plan? The fact that you're asking the question tells me you already thought about it. So you might as well ask me what you have on your mind at the moment.
I have nothing except for this idea of wanting to bring a 700-year-old legacy of product into the marketplace in a unique space. Like my desire to want to collaborate is just to get more of it out there, and to be part of that creative act would be amazing. I think that you're inspiring me to think that way.
Yes, I'm absolutely open to possible collaborations, partnerships, etc. I love the questions that you also ask because I really feel like you get it, Tim. You know, often when you have these interviews, and I'm always asked to do interviews, and I'm always thinking about, okay, do I want to actually sit on an hour talking to someone who's going to ask me the same sort of, you know, rudimentary sort of questions? And it's kind of like, how did you start? Why did you start, etc. And with yours, you really went in depth, and I really appreciate that because you've also challenged me quite a lot, but not in the sense where you're uncomfortable with it, in the sense where you unlocked things which most probably would not have been able to do. So thank you so much for that.
You're very sweet. Maybe this is the beginning of our collaboration as I can get things up. my personal journey is discovering the creative entrepreneur and to recognize that the creative person who also needs to get the product out. It would be a luxury to just be a creative and have someone else do the product part of it or the supply chain part of it.
Yes.
But the fact that you have to bring in these two almost feeling contradictory minds to get something done, I have such a desire to get that creative person's work out. And when I was a producer in film and television, that was part of it. Now I just realize it's the creative entrepreneur.
We should do a documentary on it.
Yes. You signed me up. Well, now I know what we're going to collaborate on. We can make the documentary.
A it's a wonderful, a short film, you know, a short film documentary or something like that. Because I think you're right. There's something so incredibly beautiful of what's just been created here, but also in such a seamless, singular way where there's not a single player in the entire ecosystem that we've left out, that I've left out, from the customer to the artisan, to their heritage, to our brand, and then, of course, the new future, the technology that's all disrupting us all along. And we've just created it into this kind of, it's sort of like an Apple ecosystem, isn't it? If you think about it, this is the future in so many ways. But again, it's a long game.
It is a very long game. And I love the fact that you're seeing it as a future because, again, it feels very insular, but it has to be. It's not mass produced.
No.
It's art.
Yes.
So it's insular because it's limited in resource and limited and it takes a lot of time in order to an investment to make that product. That's why it's a standalone art piece. That's why Anna Wintour will put your handbag in a museum during one of her displays in the future. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be a standalone piece that people can recognize. And you generated it like other artists, other fine artists in history. I think many of us want to know what it's like to become that person. And I think you've identified some very clear elements of not just authenticity and purpose, but also admiration for what came before, recognition of what needs to come, and the desire to connect. Those are all things that are going to be part of this.
And I would also add two other elements, which are, you know, my sort of own personal value system, although some may not think it. Firstly, I mean, I'm very detailed, pedantic to the point of being detailed with everything I do, but that's normal, a creative mind. But also humility, you know, being grounded, just having that, you know, 2 feet on the ground and not taking yourself so serious and seeing yourself as this great big thing or above and better than everyone else. I, for me, that is kind of like a death knell, because I know as soon as you start feeling, thinking or seeing yourself that way, you've just closed yourself to probably 2/3 of more meaning and more meaningful creation. So those qualities, I think, are so rare, but also so important, you know, when you're kind of building. And I, despite all my challenges and all the difficulty and the trauma and the tragedy, etc., I still feel that with my work, I'm still happy.
Wonderful.
I still find happiness.
I'm so thankful for you taking this time to talk to me. I wanted to, when I reached out to you, I felt shy. Like, okay, will she even say yes and accept the interview? And to for you to take the time, but to share your story is amazing. To see you thriving today and pushing through the life's issues, it's so encouraging.
Yeah.
I love that you know the anchor of your inspiration, the core of inspiration that allows you to be a creative person. I don't know. I think I loved it. And those who are listening are going to be equally inspired.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. You know, this is kind of like a dream sort of interviewer that you have, because it just shows that you're really interested in us as people, not just, you know, kind of having material or content to kind of be publishing on your site, etc. So it didn't come across that at all, to be honest. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that you're recognizing it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Rev Thinking Podcast. And thank you for being part of this journey where we dive deep into the heart of creativity and the business behind it. If today's conversation inspired you, sparked an idea, or gave you a tool to move forward, please share it with someone else who could benefit from it. Your support helps us reach and empower more creative entrepreneurs just like you. The Rev Thinking Podcast is a product of RevThink and hosted by myself, Tim Thompson, founder and chief revolution thinker at RevThink. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date with our latest insights, stories, and conversations. And if you're looking to dive deeper into mastering the 7 ingredients of a creative business, visit us at RevThink.com. Here you'll find resources, tools, and a community of like-minded business leaders like yourself. If you are a studio owner, join us at revthink.com/community and join our community of over 600 business owners learning, discussing, and sharing life together. At RevThink, we're here to help you thrive in your business, life, and career, because at RevThink, we believe the best way to deal with the future is to create it. So until next time, keep creating, keep innovating, and remember, your best work is yet to come. I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.